Why do we have a state government if we just all rely on the federal government?
The meeting of the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come to order. Welcome, everyone. You may notice that today's chair is a little shorter than the normal.
What, inch and a half?
Yeah, about a foot shorter. Glad you're all here. We're going to take things slightly out of order. We're going to go with 2918 first, and so, and just to give everyone some idea of what we're going to do, we're going to 2918 first, 2630 second, HB 3130 third, and HB 3266 last. Sound all right, Charlie?
Sounds good. Thank you.
So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2918. Troy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 2918-1 permits Department of Transportation to enter into agreements with transportation departments in Washington State and British Columbia regarding Cascade Rail Corridor, establishes goals and objectives for department, including but not limited to funding options, stakeholder outreach, performance goals, cost share, and management of fleet assets, directs department to biannually report to Legislative Assembly on status of agreements and other items regarding corridor, declares emergency effective upon passage. Mr. Chairman and committee members, we are in possession of all of the required paperwork, including the Dash 1 amendments.
Thank you. And Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative, District 13. First of all, I would like to emphasize thank you to the committee administrator, Mr. Rayburn, for mentioning that there's a Dash 1 amendment that I do recommend that you consider. It's at my request, please. The bill really covered two things. One was to put in statute the intent that we should do our passenger rail planning as a bi-state planning thing for the rail corridor. The Oregon-Washington Northwest Rail Corridor, some people call it the Cascadia Corridor. The second part of the bill had been an indication of maintaining the status quo. Right now we have two trips a day along that line, and the bill said, and we shall maintain those two trips a day. There's a fiscal impact statement attached to that, which is surprised me because I had figured, I'll just be honest with you, I thought, well, gee, since we're doing the status quo, this bill doesn't incur any new fiscal impact. But that's not the way it's viewed from a technical nature, and it has a large fiscal impact if you were bothering to look at paperwork. So I am suggesting that you basically back out that second part, which talks about the two trips a day on the corridor. That's what the Dash 1 amendment is. So when it's time to introduce that in the process, I'd like to do that. But now to the bill, the main point of the bill. The federal government officially recognizes the 466-mile corridor in the Pacific Northwest for passenger rail transportation. It has been on the books since 1992. Out here, sometimes we call it the Cascadia Corridor. It's not an Oregon route, but it's not a Washington route. It's a route of which one end is in Eugene and the other end is Vancouver, British Columbia. It's a bi-state route. In fact, it's bi-national because it terminates in another country. There's much to gain by making sure that we continue to plan this corridor and enter into operational agreements as a single corridor rather than Oregon doing its thing, Washington doing its thing. That's really not going to serve us very well. We need to plan infrastructure, route timing, even pricing. For the most part, rail planning discussions have been fragmented, with various stakeholders and interest groups providing different sorts of enthusiasm and suggestions. Groups like PENWR, the Pacific Northwest Economic Region, which is a collaboration of five states and two provinces of Canada, AORTA, the Rail Users League, the United Transportation Union, OSPURG, Rail Now, the Cascadia High Speed Rail Council, and there are a couple of other business and urban planning groups centered in Portland as well. All of them each have ideas and suggestions to offer about this rail corridor. Joint planning is a good idea. Last year, the directors of Oregon and Washington Departments of Transportation signed a memorandum of understanding, quote, to document the mutual understanding between partners regarding joint funding and oversight responsibilities for Pacific Northwest Rail Corridor passenger service toward the goal of coordinated, efficient, and effective passenger service in the PWRC, end quote. It further says that the partners will work collaboratively to develop a corridor management plan that will include governance, management, planning, funding, equipment. Sometimes we call that train sets. I think it's kind of cute. It reminds me of the train sets I had as a kid. But these are the real trains. And also jointly planning performance measures. The agreement can be terminated on 30 days' notice. But I want to underscore that was an agreement that was signed by two directors of transportation. It's an executive branch agreement that was it negotiated or discussed and then culminated in this memorandum. I think it's a great idea. I'm very supportive of it. I think there should be something that indicates legislative intent that this really is the right thing to do and establish some legislative oversight over that activity. I think it's appropriate now for legislative action because we will acknowledge with this that bi-state planning and oversight is something we're committed to, and the legislative oversight piece is that we will ask for a biennial report to the legislature, which will bring increased visibility, the transparency part, and public access to the effort. Finding funds to improve passenger rail and even simply to maintain the current service will be challenging. There is a group that had already discussed what should be done about funding in the future, and recommendations have been made by another group. But showing that we are planning as a single corridor, I think, will demonstrate to the federal government that we are serious about helping enable this vision to be realized. I think it puts Oregon in a much better place when we start applying seriously for federal grants for improving passenger rail system, because it shows we're team players and we're helping to achieve the rail corridor. We're not just asking for something only for Oregon that benefits Oregon only. Frankly, I think it really does put us in a better place for competing successfully for grants. Maintaining the current level of service, at least two round trips daily, was included, as I mentioned in the bill, but I'm asking that you please consider and move the dash one amendments so that that part isn't included, because frankly, I'd rather not send this down to Ways and Means with a fiscal impact statement that has six zeros, not including decimal points. That was just too many for me to in good conscience want to put forward. So in conclusion, I think this is not a heavy lift for us. In a way, it's codifying or putting in statute current or standard operating procedure. An agreement already exists. I have just observed that I think it's not a good idea for the agreement to exist only in the executive branch level. I think there needs to be legislative commitment behind it and legislative oversight over the activity. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Greenlink.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlink, House District 33, which comes within 50 feet of Union Station in Portland. I think this young woman is an amazing woman who's down to earth and knows a ton of things and thinks about things in a marvelous way. I want to talk a little bit about dreaming. I grew up the son of a railroad man. We used to spend all of our vacations on trains going someplace or another in the United States. I spent time in Europe on the wonderful rail system in Europe. 2 years ago, I was in China and got to ride on the fastest train in the world at that time, which went between Beijing and a port city 75 miles away, in 30 minutes station to station, and it was a, that suburb was a bedroom community for Beijing with 8 trips a day in each direction, taking 30 minutes to go. We have the ultimate potential, if we think far enough advanced, to do things like allowing you to live in Portland and teach at the University of Oregon in Eugene, and to travel between Portland and Seattle in perhaps 2 hours, which would take about 20% of the flights out of Portland International Airport and make that a possible airport for the future, because about 20% of the flights or more are between Portland and Seattle, and nobody would fly between Portland and Seattle if you could get there on a train in 2 hours. But we can't get to those dreams unless we do the base work now, the work that underlies that, the work that gets these two states and two countries talking together about how we do this incrementally, how we move one step further, not immediately to high-speed rail, perhaps not ever to high-speed rail, but relatively quickly to higher-speed rail and then to higher again. But we can't do it without doing the kind of groundwork that's viewed in Representative Nathanson's bill. And I just am here to support that bill, to tell you how important I think that base work that can happen with this kind of planning, particularly between the two states, because the future will happen in a very odd way if we don't plan for it. I'd rather see the future well planned so we can move to the place where we dreamers can figure out how to get where we want to go faster on the train.
Thank you very much, Representatives. Are there questions for this panel? I have one. And if we, I'll just draw your attention to line 18. And it says, oversee operations and marketing of daily passenger rail service in the corridor. Do you anticipate that this group would begin to look at operations that are currently ongoing, or is this something in anticipation of other activity?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it's my understanding that those discussions have already been taking place. I had a meeting with a representative each of the Oregon and Washington Departments of Transportation to talk about what's the discussions that and collaboration that have been happening, and it's been very rewarding to see that they do talk. They are talking about how to plan these things together, and it's possible that someone from the department who's here may want to answer that in more detail, but it appears to me that these kinds of discussions are already happening, and it's to everyone's benefit. You know, if we can improve, either slight or large changes in scheduling, it could have an impact on increasing ridership, for example.
Yeah, if I may comment on that, this is in aid of the overall statement in Section 1 about making agreements between the two departments, and this is one of the topics that those agreements could happen. They happen now in the context of agreements with Amtrak, because the service is complicated, because it's Amtrak service in some pieces, and some pieces are essentially supported by the two states. So it simply allows those agreements to deal with operations and marketing. I think that's all that section is intended to do.
Mm. Representative McCowan.
Thank you, Co-Chair Benson. Just a Representative Greenlick, I understand the concept of dreaming. And I see two states involved in this. And my first question is, where's the southern terminus of this? Is it Eugene that you're proposing? And is there some point in the future where it could be the Cascade, Siskiyou, Sierra corridor, and we could see something go further south and join in a partnership with our neighbor to the south?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this is a federally designated route. The federal government chose the southern and northern terminus, and it's called a high-speed rail corridor. It doesn't mean it's appropriate for a bullet train, perhaps, but higher speeds and intercity or even commuter types of travel. I think the point was to designate only a handful of corridors in the country that had the best best potential for being those that were going to handle the highest volumes and have the most promise for the future. So rather than looking at less frequent trains that might be for those very long trips cross-country or, for example, from Washington down into Southern California, those would still be planned and part of a federal government vision of interstate travel. But as far as a corridor for the high-speed rail, this is something set by the federal government.
And follow-up, sir?
Mr. Chair, if I could comment as well on that. I've always, in fact, had a dream. It seemed to me a train ought to just run right down I-5, I mean, rather than splitting off to the east to get over into California. There are really huge technical problems in getting trains over those hills between here and Medford, say, or Ashland, and therefore, consequently, still difficult problems with getting it over to your district, which ultimately, I mean, we're having trouble just keeping freight service into your district.
I'm not even dreaming about passenger service there. Actually, I dream about it, but that's a whole other story. Yeah. A follow-up. I was privileged to sit on a year or so ago on the Rail Funding Task Force, and we met for a year, and we were looking for sources of revenue that could support rail infrastructure, primarily freight, but passenger also was part of the conversation. And one of the recommendations that came out of the committee when it culminated was forming a special district in the Willamette Valley to support passenger service between Eugene and Portland. I think that report's sitting on a shelf somewhere, but it was an idea to provide some support. Passenger rail I'm asked about often to the coast, and freight has to pay the bills. And I know in a lot of regards it's the freight that pays the way to keep rail corridors open, but I do appreciate your taking a look at this, and I think it's something that partnerships are important, and if planning can be done, I appreciate your looking out into the future and seeing if there's something that we can do.
A few years ago, Mr. Chair, we were able to tap some regular resources to help support the Eugene-Portland part of the Cascades mm-hmm. by tapping the revenue of custom license plates, which were viewed as not having to go to roads but could go to other transportation needs, and that provided us some secure funding for a while. I'm not sure if that's still in the package, but I think
I don't know.
Further questions for this panel? Yes.
Davis. Thank you, Chair. Question for you. Are we going to hear from ODOT on this? And follow up to them. Thank you for bringing this to our attention. I think as I'm reading through the bill, I'm almost concerned that it doesn't go far enough in the sense that Section 1 essentially, as I read it, gives the department authorization to do something that it already has the authority to do. I appreciate the request or the requirement for legislative reporting. But this discussion reminds me of some of our economic development discussions that we've been having, and you mentioned how many different groups are working on this. Mm-hmm. And I might even suggest that something this bill directing the department or creating a task force to try to consolidate that, much as some of the efforts undertaking right now in regards to economic development in the state, where we have 10 or 12 or 15 state agencies doing parallel things. One of the issues you've identified, it seems to me, is trying to unify those efforts among citizens, stakeholder groups, local governments, and the state of Oregon, so that this isn't merely just a keep doing what you're doing bill, but this might move the ball forward a little bit. So there's a question in there somewhere, I suppose. I'll let you find it.
I will respond with a couple of thoughts, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. The state can do what it will about trying to coordinate efforts or have a single point of entry for citizen involvement, but all those other groups would still exist anyway. Some of them in most cases already existed, mm-hmm. and rail is on their agenda. It's on their radar. They want to talk about it, and we will never supplant all of the private organizational activity that's going on that helps advise what we do. They will advocate. They will suggest. They will bring issues to our attention. There is a rail advisory committee that the director of the department appoints, and it meets at the, I believe, at the direction of the director of the department. A couple of years ago, I proposed a bill that I would love to talk with you sometime about, Representative Davis. The bill would have established a more permanent and more visible rail advisory council that would have reported to the Oregon Transportation Commission. The idea was to elevate the discussion, to have it be a little bit more visible, offer more legislative oversight in a way, because it's through the Transportation Commission. That bill did not make it out of committee, but I continue to think that that's probably a good direction to go, rather than having only a department advisory committee. We will probably get to the point where we should have a rail advisory committee reporting to the Transportation Commission, because the Transportation Commission has an awful lot on its plate, and it can't it can't handle all of the issues on its own without having some advisory bodies to lean on to do some of that roll up your sleeves background work. Also, I currently sit on the Passenger Rail Leadership Council, which is a time-limited group that's been appointed to study options for the corridor, the passenger rail corridor between Eugene and Portland, and present recommendations. But once that group's work is done, it wouldn't have a reason to exist any longer, unless someone decided to revive it and ask it some new questions to answer.
Thank you, Representatives. Further questions? Seeing none. Thank you so much. And with that, we'd like to call up Hal Gard from ODOT.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Hal Gard. I'm the administrator of the Rail and Public Transit Divisions of the Oregon Department of Transportation. Thank you very much. I'd like to quickly outline some of the dynamics that the two states, Washington and Oregon, are currently struggling with regard to passenger rail. First, and I would be remiss if I didn't lead off with this, but ridership, passenger rail ridership in the state of Oregon has increased 250%. Since its inception in 1995, and there really isn't any sign of that upward trend line decreasing as far as we can tell.
Now, some might wonder if that means we went from 4 to 16, so maybe you can tell us how much that really is.
No, pardon me?
I said 250% of what? Did we start with 2 passengers and went to 16, or what
happened? In 1995, we started with a little over 60,000 riders when we started. Today, not including the Coast Starlight, the Amtrak owned run, we're seeing 211,000 passengers. So that's the scale.
And could you tell us over what geographic reach those passengers
are? That's between Eugene and Portland only.
Okay.
Per year.
Per year.
Per year.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Washington State, as part of the ARRA funds, received $800 million to do line improvements on their section of the rail corridor. So that's between Portland and Vancouver, British Columbia. The price of that $800 million is that they increase their scheduled service on their section of the line, so that they needed to increase the number of trips that are occurring in that section. That has to occur by 2017. There are currently 5 Cascade trains that are operating on that route. 2 of them are owned by Amtrak, 3 of them are owned by the state of Washington. And in order for them to be able to increase service, they would have ended up reducing service on the Oregon section of the corridor between Eugene and Portland, Oregon. That prompted the state of Oregon to use some available ARRA dollars to purchase 2 brand new train sets, and that allows us to preserve our current service and actually gives us a little larger voice in the discussion and allows us to actually get some schedule improvements where we may be able to continue to increase our ridership. So basically adding a morning run from Portland to Eugene and an evening run from Eugene to Portland that currently doesn't exist. Another dynamic is in 2009, the federal government passed the Passenger Rail Investment and Improvement Act. The key provision of this law transfers the cost for all rail service to the states. So Oregon and Washington in October of this year will have to pick up all costs for the operating costs that currently was partly subsidized by Amtrak.
And do you know what those costs are?
They are changing regularly, and I will give you our current estimates. I will have to bring it back to the committee. But Amtrak is still wrestling with trying to break out the individual costs overall. But we're looking at a fairly significant increase.
Per passenger, round number?
I will have to get back to you.
Thank you. If you would, that'd be
overall. Another requirement for us to be able to access future federal funds is to require that all the states have current rail plans and passenger or corridor improvement plans in place. That's work we've undertaken. And currently, the cost of the service from Washington up to Vancouver, British Columbia, is completely shouldered by British Columbia at this time. They have absolutely no financial involvement in that service. So all of these factors combined have really prompted Oregon and Washington to coordinate a lot more closely on how we operate this service. We want to maintain and grow our ridership. We are actually the growth market as we look at the overall rail corridor, but we don't want to be doing that at the expense of Washington and vice versa. They are not interested in seeing us reduce our service. We will very shortly be an equipment owner. We are looking to receive our two new Talgo train sets very, very shortly. We're looking at having them come out here and start corridor testing hopefully in the next month if all goes well. But we don't have long-term experience maintaining train sets. The maintenance facilities are currently housed in Seattle. Those facilities are owned and operated by Amtrak. But Washington has got a pretty sophisticated operation providing that maintenance oversight and accountability in terms of maintaining that equipment. We also have shared contractual interests with the state of Washington. Currently, ODOT and Washington have separate operating agreements with Amtrak. We also are needing to enter into a maintenance contract with the train manufacturer. And there's a strong amount of interest in actually having tri-party agreements and actually four-party agreements for the operation of the train lines as well as for overseeing the maintenance on the entire fleet of the trains. Coordinated state rail plans and corridor plans, as I mentioned earlier, they will allow us to better compete for federal funds without competing with each other for those funds, so that we're actually able to coordinate those improvements across the corridor in terms of highest need, as opposed to who gets the largest piece of the pie. And with the two states, a united position allows us to more effectively negotiate with British Columbia and try to get some financial participation in the service that's currently being provided in the corridor. So in conclusion, this House bill does correct a direct link between the work we're currently doing and with the legislature, and it allows us to really manage the passenger rail line as a single entity, a joint entity, but we're doing it in a coordinated fashion, and the legislature, through the passage of this bill, would be providing direct policy direction to do that work. And finally, the federal government, as we talk about our efforts, signing that MOU, even notice of this proposed bill, are strongly supportive of that joint approach towards managing the corridor. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, Mr. Gard? Yes.
It is more of a comment. I'm an average train rider. I probably haven't driven to Seattle in the past 10 years. And what I've noticed in the past 10 years is I used to be able to call the day before and get a ticket on Amtrak. And now if I call a week ahead of time, I'm lucky to get a ticket on Amtrak, and they're adding more trains in this from the Portland to Seattle route. So, and it just talking to some of the train folks, it is highly usual for people to sometimes take the train two or three times a week to Seattle for business, and they're doing that instead of the flying, just because of the convenience of having it land in downtown Seattle. So I personally have seen the ridership just leap and jump, and this was before gas got higher and so on and so forth. And I'd like to see a two-hour train ride, because it's 3.5 now. So.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And with that, I'm going to close the... Do you have anybody else signed up? That's it, right?
That's it.
Yeah. Close the work session on House Bill 2918, and I'm sorry, the public hearing on House Bill 2918, and open a work session on House Bill 2918.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the -1 amendment to House Bill 2918.
Representative Nathanson has moved the -1 amendment to 2918. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, the -1s are adopted. Representative Nathanson.
Mr. Chair, we have information that accounting for the -1 amendment, this bill has received now paperwork that says there's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. So I would like to move House Bill 2918 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Nathanson has moved House Bill 2918 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'm just looking in Orlis. I didn't see that information. Is it something that's...
With the -1s.
Is the fiscal, the removal of the...
Mr. Rabin have it. I can pass mine.
It should be in the pass. There you go, sir.
It's in Orlis, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Discussion? See none. Is there objection? Oops.
No.
Discussion.
No.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. This is a freshman question, but I'm looking at the agenda and it doesn't indicate a work session on the agenda. Is that
possible?
A procedural issue that I'm not clear on?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative McEwen, you'll notice the agenda says public hearing and possible work session at the very top in bold.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for drawing my attention to that. My apologies.
That's fine. So, further discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, House Bill 2918 as amended is passed to the floor with a new pass recommendation. And the carrier is Representative Nathanson.
Thank you.
Thank you. So with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2018 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2630.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 2630 requires person to yield right-of-way to county-operated transit bus entering traffic. And for that, we have Scott Cheney, Josephine County, and Ann Hannes, AOC.
So if Scott and Ann would come up.
You start up.
Their meeting materials.
Mr. Chair, committee, for the record, I'm Scott Chansey. I'm the transit program manager for Josephine County. Basically, what this is this amends the existing ORS, which is the yield to the transit bus law. It includes county in the definition of transit bus. The current definition states that transit service or a transit vehicle is a system operated by a city, a mass transit district, or a transportation district. The issue with Josephine County is we are none of those. So we cannot enforce the provisions of ORS, what is it, 811.167. Ironically, the DMV manual does state that a person is supposed to yield to a transit bus. But it doesn't give the definition of what a transit bus is. So there's some inconsistencies in terms of what the law is, what's out there in terms of printed material. this is such a common practice in Oregon that we can actually get the yield to the transit bus sign, which is an electronic flashing sign, specced in all of our vehicles. And I go ahead and I do that every time I order a vehicle. Problem is no one abides by those rules. We can go ahead and use the signs, but nobody yields to our buses when we're trying to get in and out of traffic. Part of the problem, or one of the reasons why they would not be, or other motorists wouldn't be abiding by these rules, is because I can't put out a public service announcement or notify the public that this is a responsibility of theirs, since we can enforce the law. So essentially that's what the situation that we deal with. I think when the law was originally written, there were very few county-operated transit systems. They were operated by cities or mass transit districts or transportation districts. Well, Josephine County now has been declared, not the whole county, but a portion of it is now declared urban. So we are a vibrant transit system, and our ridership's grown 125% in the last 4 years. So the ability for us to stay on time and maintain our passengers is very critical, and this is one of the ways that we would do that. So not only is it for keeping us on time or helping maintain our on-time performance, and you know, with the amount of ridership that we're seeing, it also allows us to safely enter traffic. So two of the main components of good public transit is safety and on-time performance, and this bill would provide us with both. Essentially, it would level the playing field and eliminate a loophole in the law that currently sits.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ann?
For the record, I'm Ann Hannis. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. Vice Chair Benz, members of the committee, we also support House Bill 2630 because it fixes a loophole in the law. There are 13 county transit entities across operated transit services across the state, so we urge your support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth. Thank you, Vice Chairs, committee members. Drew Hagedorn appearing today on behalf of the Oregon Transit Association. I think others before me said it well. Just here to say that the Transit Association also supports this concept, and we urge your support as well. So thank you. Thank you. Questions for this panel? I knew the lawyer would have a question about this incredibly complex bill. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair. Could you tell me exactly where I'm allowed to not yield right now for the next 90 days? Oh. You don't have to answer that.
Further, I don't even call that a question. Further thoughts?
Grants Pass, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Grants Pass is now urban?
That is correct. They were just, through the last census, declared urbanized. So.
Very good.
Thank you very much. I see no questions. Thank you very much. And we don't have anyone else, is that correct, signed up?
No one else signed up.
All right. I think we can probably close the public hearing on 2630 and open a work session on 2630.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'll move House Bill 2630 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron has moved House Bill 2630 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And we need a carrier.
Representative Hicks will probably want to carry.
Okay, the carrier is Representative Hicks. Mm-hmm. So with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2630 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3130.
Troy. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 3130 modifies list of new technologies or type of economic enterprises that qualify for use of money deposited in industrial development revolving funds of individual counties to include development of traffic control devices. I believe everybody should be in possession of the Dash 2 amendments, and I believe the presenters will also introduce those Dash 2 amendments. And Mr. Chairman, we have all the required paperwork.
And we have coming up.
This is a traffic light insurance.
Representative Plain. Here we go. Oh, okay. Then we'll go with Representative Plain. You want to go first?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Transportation Committee. My name is Mike McLean, and I am the House. Representative for District 55, and which includes Lapine and the area at issue. I've testified to you before. I know you all remember the robust and rigorous testimony, so I'll incorporate that here by reference and then pass it over to one of the greatest commissioners.
Thank you.
East of the mountains, Tammy Bainey of Deschutes County.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. And I will actually defer. I'm going to hold my testimony just for a moment, if you don't mind, and defer to our Road Department Director, Chris Doty.
Good afternoon, Chair and Committee members. Chris Doty, Deschutes County Public Works Director. As many of you are probably aware, U.S. 97 bifurcates the city of Lapine, cuts it in half in southern Deschutes County. Lapine does not have a traffic signal on U.S. 97. As you can see, although in this picture it does. But as you can also probably imagine, with the traffic on 97, there is pent-up demand for signalization of a local intersection to U.S. 97. Not just for vehicular reasons, but for bike and ped reasons as well, to cross the highway and so forth. The intersection of U.S. 97 and 1st Street is currently operating at or near ODOT's mobility standard and meets the appropriate warrants for signalization. There is a significant amount of vacant property, vacant industrial property, that is served east of the intersection. And the traffic signal will add capacity to help that industrial property develop and remove a hurdle for development when projects come forward. The improvement also addresses a fairly significant safety issue on 97, as you can see on the handouts that you have. And in this picture here, we have school facilities on the west side, fast food on the east side, and another picture that shows, of course, the difficulty in trying to cross U.S. 97 at that location.
Once again, did we have an identification on those? Wasn't that Representative McLean and...
Yeah.
Oh, this,
yeah.
Yeah. Representative Wisnett was supposed to be one of them.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you.
We were fearful they might get hit.
We weren't.
Go ahead. Heels was McLean.
So through development of the U.S. 97 corridor plan through Lapine, this intersection was identified as one of the highest priority improvement projects in the community. ODOT is actually developing engineered plans for the signalization of the intersection. However, there is a funding gap. They have the project approximately 50% funded. ODOT will be able to close that funding gap with a contribution from the community, from Deschutes County in this case, and leverage additional safety funds that they have available to completely close the funding gap. Deschutes County is willing to contribute $200,000 from our Industrial Development Revolving Fund, which has accumulated revenue from property sales of the Lapine Industrial Park, which is just yards away from this intersection. ORS 275-318 governors expenditures related to industrial revolving funds and will require some modifications and clarifications to allow this type of expenditure for this off-site intersection improvement, hence the House bill that we're here to talk about. Now, this is a rare circumstance, I believe, where we have the funding, we have the partnership, and all players on board, but in this case, we don't have the tweaks and the adjustments within the ORS to allow the county to contribute funds of this nature, given the restrictions in the ORS. We feel the changes that are proposed are positive clarifications, not just for Deschutes County, but other potential projects of similar circumstance that could potentially move forward as well. So, thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners?
Thank you. Vice Chair Gorsuch and Vice Chair Bentz and members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Tammy Bainey, and I'm a Deschutes County Commissioner. I really want to also thank Representatives McLean and Wisnett for supporting this and for sponsoring this bill. We are not coming here today asking for money, and I feel a little lonely in that, but it's a good thing. And I think it's an important piece that what we've been asked to do on a local level is to come up with solutions to meet our community's needs. And that is exactly what you
you have in front of us and in front of you. And the city of Lapine is the newest city in the state of Oregon. And as we look at the potential Damascus situation of actually unincorporating, I think it's really exciting to see a community that has come together to make investments and improvements in their community and actually push things forward. So it is a very aggressive community. They want change. They invest in their children through educational opportunities. They're investing in some of their medical facilities as well. But they have really high unemployment right now because there just are not the jobs available. It's a 30-mile drive from Lapine to Bend. And those 30 miles, there are a lot of beautiful trees and a lot of wildlife in between, but not a lot of opportunity. So it's really important that they are allowed to create them an investment in their own community to create jobs so that the children who go to school there and actually now have higher education opportunities in that community can also have a job in that same community where their support systems are. So we ask that you bless this. The fact that it is not a financial request right now as well, we do ask that you support with the Dash 2 amendments, and if you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Representative, did you have anything to add?
No, thank you.
All right. Questions for this panel?
Yes, Representative Dorsey.
First of all, I think it's a good expansion of enterprise zones and what you guys want to do with it. But just looking at the legislation, it's very kind of slim and not real expansive. Can you see any sort of unintended consequences down the road with this? Because I know that it just modifies, you know, the technologies and so on. But I just would hate to have a very, very, very good idea, you know, run into snags. Do you see anything with that?
If I may, Vice Chair, Representative, what the Dash 2 will actually allow is that it needs to be linked with that, with the, I believe the language is that it would be construction of off-site transportation or utility that serves a project. Okay. And this is, we have made the improvements on this particular industrial land, utilities, and all of the infrastructure that's necessary. We're essentially sitting on money now that we are not able to spend. So I would state that as long as it's linked to a project and that it is for the construction, I believe that the language kind of backs you in a corner that it would need to be for a specific project. So for us, that's obviously this project, but I can see where you would be concerned about a slippery slope of could they move it into a... We could use it on industrial lands in the city of Redmond, and that would be certainly the Board of Commissioners could do that. But the need is in the community of Lapine, and so the dollars were also generated through the community of Lapine. So how do we link those together?
And that was the project?
Correct.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Further questions? Yes.
I don't have a question, Mr. Chair. I just want to comment. If you look at this picture, the second picture of the people running across, I've been in that situation because we've stopped to dine at one of those fine restaurants on that side with our grandchildren, decided to cross the road, and unfortunately we didn't decide to run until we should have been running. Mm-hmm. But we made it safely, but I certainly understand the issue and appreciate your bringing this forward.
Thank you.
Surprised the trial lawyers aren't objecting to this bill.
Now that might show up.
I'm on the other side of that. So defense.
Barton's not further here. Questions for this panel?
Good bill should pass.
Yes.
Is it urban? I mean, Grant's passed now. Urban, is this an urban area?
No.
Is it urban?
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Parrish, Lapine would not be classified as urban.
Rural development. Okay. Got to stop right
would certainly. Be pleased that you asked.
further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's, Troy, do we have anybody else?
Nope.
Signed up? Then I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3130 and open a work session on House Bill 3130.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 2s to House Bill 3130.
Representative Cameron has moved the Dash 2s to House Bill 3130. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 3130 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron has moved House Bill 3130 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none.
So ordered, and...
You may want to announce Representative Nathanson and Representative Reed are excused.
I'm sorry, Representative Nathanson and Representative Reed are excused for purposes of that vote. And let's see, Representative McLean, do you want to carry?
Well, thank you.
Goodness,
you're first.
Oh, that's great.
Okay. Great. With that, I will close the work session on House Bill 3130 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3266.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 3266 permits waste collection vehicles to stop, stand, or park to collect solid waste, recyclable material, or yield yard debris. We have all of the necessary paperwork, Mr. Chairman.
And we have Ann Hannes, Laura Liebrick, and Christian Lechner. They would come up.
I'm requesting to be justifying for AOC.
Okay, great. Okay, before we begin, if anybody makes any jokes about garbage.
It's okay, we're used to it.
All right, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Bentz, members of the committee, and staff. For the record, my name is Laura Liebrick, and I'm the Governmental Affairs Director for Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. With me today is Kristen Lechner from Pride Disposal in Sherwood. Kristen is also the Vice Chair of ORA's Governmental Affairs Committee. We're here to testify in support of House Bill 3266. ORA is a statewide trade association representing solid waste management companies in Oregon. ORA members collect and process most of Oregon's residential and commercial refuse and recyclables, as well as operate material recovery facilities, compost facilities, and many of Oregon's municipal solid waste transfer stations and landfills. In most communities across the state, ORA members do this work under the direction of and in partnership with city and county government. House Bill 3266 would provide an exemption for solid waste and recycling collection vehicles to stop in the lane of traffic for the purposes of engaging in any activity associated with collecting solid waste, recycling, and yard debris. ORA was unaware of the need for this exemption until mid-December of last year, when an ORA member company's collection vehicle was struck by another vehicle during a stop while en route in Crook County. There were no injuries. And we learned during the course of the accident investigation that there is no specific exemption in the law for this activity. Whenever possible, ORA members attempt to design routes that allow their drivers to get their vehicles off of the roads to provide service, but in most cases, that is not an option. This bill acknowledges that. We have some video that shows the activity our members' vehicles engage in, and Kristen will provide a bit of narrative as the short video clips play. Then we'd both be happy to take any questions that you might have for us.
Good afternoon, Chair Bentz, members of the committee, and staff. For the record, my name is Kristen Lechner, and I'm the Office and Public Relations Manager.
Push the microphone just a little. Thank you so much.
Is that better?
Yeah, perfect.
A family-owned and operated solid waste collection company in Sherwood, Oregon. As Laura mentioned, I'm also the Vice Chair of ORA's Governmental Affairs Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today to testify in support of House Bill 3266. The video clips you are viewing were provided by my company, as well as Western Oregon Waste in McMinnville and North Lincoln Sanitary in Lincoln City. The footage will give you a good idea of what our trucks look like while en route and when stopping in the lane of traffic to provide service to our customers from the perspective of other traffic on the road. Pride Disposal has a fleet of 30 trucks. These trucks operate on both rural and city roads. The average residential route truck stops roughly 900 times a day in the course of completing its route.
Wow, they can even hear it.
We recognize the hazards involved in stopping in the lane of traffic to provide curbside service. We employ a number of safety features on our trucks to alert traffic to our presence and activity. You can see in the video the highly visible flashing lights on the front and rear of our vehicles. These lights are part of the DOT requirements for commercial vehicles. All of our trucks have video cameras mounted to better allow our drivers to see what is going on behind and around them. In addition to the training required to receive a commercial driver's license, the drivers also receive training about the unique hazards of operating in and around traffic. They are trained at orientation and during our weekly safety meetings. Our drivers are all outfitted with highly reflective outerwear and vests in case they have to get out of the vehicle to provide service. We have converted most of our residential routes to fully automated equipment over the last few years, which means that our drivers do not have to exit the vehicles to service the customers. This not only increases the efficiency of our routes, but also reduces the exposure our drivers have to passing traffic. We hope this video has been useful to you as an illustration of the emphasis we place on the safety of our people, our vehicles, and other road users in the course of serving our customers. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today. We appreciate your time and consideration and welcome any questions you may have for us.
Okay, why don't we wait until we've heard from our third person? And
thank you. Members of the committee, my name is Emily Ackland. I'm the Environmental Policy Manager at the Association of Oregon Counties. The Association of Oregon Counties supports House Bill 3266. It is vital to county solid waste programs that the haulers of solid waste are able to collect their material in a safe and efficient manner. Please make it legal for our haulers to stop their vehicles when engaging in activities associated with the collection of solid waste. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Well,
Representative Cameron.
There you go.
Go ahead, Representative.
Well, this is just a comment. Being a customer of Pride, I'm glad that you're able to stop and pick up my garbage on Tuesday morning. I didn't realize that this was something that was illegal, and obviously you didn't either, but okay. Looks like a rapid fix. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Interesting, I just thought about this week as I was driving into the Capitol out south here on a county road, and the recycle truck was on my side of the road facing me and picking up the garbage on a pretty busy 45-mile-an-hour highway. So I'm wondering, does this cover them when they're on the wrong side of the road?
Representative Cameron, my understanding is that it would not. This is in the lane of traffic.
Sounds like they'd still be a traffic hazard.
Mm-hmm. In the opposite lane of traffic?
Yeah, I would think. Other questions?
Thank you.
Other questions? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nobody United, so we'll close the public hearing on House Bill.
All right. We're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3266. And now let's open a work session on House Bill 3266.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 3266 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Cameron recommends that we send this to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All right. Is there any objection? All right. Very good. It passes. Off to the floor.
Wait, excused.
Oh.
Announcing.
Oh, yeah. And then we have Representative Nathanson and Representative Bent and Representative Reed are all excused for this vote.
Close the work session.
And that closes the work session.
Committee carrying.
We're adjourned. All right.
That was carrying.
Okay. And unless you have something else?
It was
anybody
really
else?
Early in the morning.
Yeah. All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Good job.
We're going to adjourn this meeting.
So I was on the
Thank you very much.
I was on the right side of the